Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to another amazing episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. I am David, and I am excited to be talking to you, but even more excited to be talking to Randy and Justin, who I love more than anything in the world. I'm saying all of this as I'm staring at a canister in my garage that says, The Dry Lube. And so, that's how we're going to start this show. How are you guys doing today?
I'm
good. How do you call a dry lube? I got to know what that is.
It's for like tires and stuff like that, like, you know, building like model cars and stuff for like my kids' Cub Scouts. Like, I had to go get special lube so his cars would go faster than other people's. And I felt
special lube for my kids, you know.
I felt all guilty, except then like one of the dads spent like $800 on like the same kind of lubrication they use on like space shuttles, and I'm like, man, you win.
That's funny. I prefer my lube to be wet.
Normally, I'd agree with you.
I got nothing. I got nothing to add.
It's actually from a brand called Blaster, and where you would normally have like a color or like a brand of it, it says Powerful. So it's Blaster Powerful the Dry Lube. And it's made with PTFE.
Yeah, and FIST.
Yeah, it's got superior long-lasting lubrication.
Mm-hmm. Enough about lube. How about Randy? How you doing, Randy?
How you doing, Randy?
I am fantastic. You know, I could actually use some of that lube right now. I got another infamous kidney stone working its way through my system, so I just reactivated the @RandysRocks Twitter account, so you can follow all the movements of all the little rocks through my urinary tract on the Twitter there.
Well, the good news, Randy, is that this has one of those, like, red straw attachments you could put on it, so you could probably just put that straight down the pee hole.
Oh man, I could just shove that up the pee hole, blast some air or lube or something into it. maybe it'll end up coming out another hole. Who knows?
I'm picturing like a balloon animal situation where you blow into it, it just gets really long. You can tie it into a knot. It's fantastic.
And then some clown walks into the room and starts trying to tie it up.
Make me a sword. I want a sword, Randy.
What a snake.
Yeah,
all of them just turn out as snakes.
And you make it penis shaped.
This is the worst clown ever.
Worst
I don't
clown.
Even think he's a real clown.
It's some homeless dude.
Yeah.
It sounded like fun.
Or pedophile.
Yeah. Say, about that Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. Justin, you loved it. Tell me about it.
I did. It's fantastic. You get all the cast doing all the funny things that make us laugh. Particularly, Baby Groot just happens to be a fan favorite. I don't think anybody's watched the trailer just once. Everyone's all over the Baby Groot. Fantastic. I didn't really quite get the group therapy talk show kind of thing that was going on, but I'm sure it'll all make sense when the movie comes out.
Right, in context.
Yeah. I was like, I don't get it. That's funny, but I don't get it. So
Randy, is the world's biggest Guardians of the Galaxy fan. I'm sure you love every second of it. And if you tell me you didn't like Baby Groot, then That's why the Rock came back.
I am one of those few people who watched it only once, and I actually enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. So maybe I won't contemplate slitting my wrist before going to see.
Oh shit!
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, the jury's out on that.
Do you think that Star-Lord and Gamora will get together, or is this going to be a nonstop sexual tension kind of thing?
Like a would they, won't, will they, won't they?
Yeah.
I think that at some point she'll like do some noble sacrifice for him, and then he'll be like, why'd you do that? Because I love you. And they'll make out.
Oh, shit.
That's just one dude talking. Do you agree, Randy?
Sure, why not?
Wow, Randy. Guardians of the Galaxy is a treasure.
When does it come out?
Because he's a rocketeer, for Christ's sake, Randy.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Comes out in next May.
Oh. So far.
May of 2017.
No, The Rocketeer was the Guardians of the Galaxy of its time.
Was it?
It was.
Is there a single joke in The Rocketeer?
I don't think so.
There are several.
No.
Are there? Is there an anthropomorphic raccoon?
I don't know. Is there a single joke in Guardians of the Galaxy that's worth laughing at?
All of them.
I think that you're in the minority on that one there, Randy.
I'm just yanking your chain.
Yeah.
Have you seen it a second time yet?
Nope. Truth is, I just don't care.
Dang, he is mean today.
It's like dead inside. That rock doing some damage to your soul?
That rock is all that's left of my soul trying to escape my body right now.
Trying to flee the dying vessel that is your body. Well, then, did you like the Transformers 5 trailer more?
It sounds horrible when you say 5.
Yeah.
Transformers.
Sorry, Transformers The Last Night with a K.
I watched it, and I have to admit, I don't know what the hell is going on in that trailer. First, Optimus Prime is dead, and then he's beating up Bumblebee. I don't know. I don't get it.
And there's Nazis? And
there's like 12 different time periods.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, you caught the Nazis, you caught like the medieval time, you got what looks like the future, what looks like the present, you got Bumblebee with like metal corn rolls, and Optimus Prime, I guess, kills him?
Some giant space thing trying to eat the moon.
And it was really weird for like a Michael Bay. Like, Michael Bay shit's all like fast, 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 fast. And like the first minute of this trailer was like 2001 A Space Odyssey slow.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what it's going for. I hope not.
It just all like the color palette looked weird, and like the aesthetic looked weird, and like everyone seemed out of place, and it was like unnerving almost.
Maybe he's experimenting.
Which is, I'm fine with. It just...
Yeah, maybe he's making an art house Transformers.
Avant-garde!
I mean, who knows? I mean, this movie's going to make $1 billion. I mean, he could do whatever he wants, and the movie sells itself. But just... Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's kind of nice, you know, that it's not just Michael Bay just slapping stuff on. I mean, I don't think we saw, like a hot, sweaty ass or, like, excessive cleavage in the whole trailer. And that's... It's got to be a first for Michael Bay.
Yeah, I think this one's all about the robots. It's all about the Transformers.
That's a novel concept in a Transformers movie, and I applaud him.
I mean, after all, we did only get to see Optimus and Bumblebee. Normally, this shit's like loaded with Transformer action. This one was just like cutscenes from different eras, and then, like you said, a Bumblebee with a fun hair choice, and then Optimus betraying his friend.
Yeah. And how weird is it to hear Anthony Hopkins in a Transformers
movie? Yeah, I don't know. Is this like the... He's been busy lately, Mr. Anthony Hopkins. Is this like that violent flicker of a candle before it goes out? Like, is he just trying to get as much work done as possible before he just says, I'm done, and punches his
last
ticket?
He crushed it in the first season of Westworld.
Oh my god, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Did you watch all of it?
I can't say that I have, because every single episode has literally put me to sleep. I've had to watch each episode twice, because I fall asleep at some point in every episode.
Maybe you're narcoleptic.
I just think it's boring as fuck.
No, I don't think that's it.
No, it is so boring.
Something wrong with your body, I think.
No, it is boring.
You need pills?
Boring.
No, it's boring. It's a slow burn, I'll give you that.
Oh, yeah, I don't even feel the burn.
Well, we'll talk about... Oh, Randy feels the burn. We'll talk about that shortly. So there was a third major tentpole film that got a trailer. We had a trailer for Tom Cruise's The Mummy. You know, Alex Kurtzman is directing it, and it's the first film in the Universal Monster shared universe. And The Mummy. Randy, you loved the Mummy, the first Mummy from Mr. Summers in the 90s, 99? Yeah,
99. 99,
yeah. Best movie what? In 99. You're so full of shit. 99 is like the magic year
for
cinema.
Fuck The Matrix and fuck the whatever Star Wars.
Wow, that's some fighting words for later. What about South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut? What about Fight Club? What about American Beauty?
Fight Club was pretty cool.
There's some good movies there. But yeah, you're the Mummy fan here. You're like third Mummy.
I well no. Nobody likes the third Mummy. I will defend part one till the day I die. Part two was still a fun romp. Part three just didn't need to be. I mean, it had fucking talking Yeti.
Mm-hmm. Remember watching that with you.
Oh my god, it's so terrible.
Just turn to each other and like, you're seeing this, right?
So
like,
one of my favorite things about the previous Mummy series was the fact that it was a period piece, which I know is an immediate turn off to you guys, but I absolutely no, because it to me, and I've said this probably on this podcast before, I know I've said it to you guys, but I'll say it to the world right now. To me, 1999's The Mummy is everything I wanted to see in an Indiana Jones 4. Mm-hmm. Maybe with a little heavy on the humor, a little heavy-handed with the humor, and that's okay. It was okay for that. Brendan Fraser could pull it off, and that cast could pull it off, and it worked to The Mummy's advantage. I absolutely adore everything about 1999's The Mummy. This one looks like it is a complete about-face, because whereas the 1999 Mummy did not take itself seriously in the slightest, this one takes itself way too seriously. I mean, just look at the intense look on Tom Cruise's face in every single shot in the fucking trailer. he does that really well, and I think that's how it's somehow the secret to his youth. But it looks interesting. It looks fun. It just, to me, I can't even compare it to the 99 Mummy because it's just so drastically different. They took something that was a fun period piece adventure romp, and they made just another set in modern day action thriller.
Right. And The Mummy, as much as I can't stand period pieces, it makes perfect sense. You know, that was an era when excavation was a really big deal, and that's when all that crap was going on, you know, in the early 1900s. So it makes perfect sense. And not having that understanding, having to really figure out what's going on. There's myth and legends that you got to deal with, and in this one, it's gonna be, you know, guns. So it's a whole different kind of ball game. I mean, yeah, Brendan Fraser had his pistolas and everything like that, but ultimately it was just, what was the name of the city, like Hamunaptra or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was discovering this lost city, and everyone was trying to do it. There was all these treasure hunters out there trying to pull it off. And that makes sense. It was like romanticizing this era of discovering a lost city.
Yeah, and
fantastic.
You totally nailed it. Egyptology was big after the 20s, after King Tut's tomb was found. It was like all the rage for like the next 20 years after that. But here's something that I'm kind of a little in the dark about. I can't even tell where this mummy is supposed to be from. Because it doesn't look like any kind of Egyptian sarcophagus. It looks like like H.R. Geiger's version of an Egyptian sarcophagus, because it's kind of got that like alien kind of feel to it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where in the world that particular mummy is supposed to be.
Looks like a Naga sarcophagus.
Right? Totally.
Naga.
But anyway, yeah. So that was part of the big thing for me, too, because I really like, you know, I really like anything kind of like old ancient Egypt. So this is, again, just kind of a departure from the previous version. But I'm sure they'll explain it in the movie, but I am really curious where this thing was found.
Right. Hey, yeah, I'm sure it has to be Egypt, right? No one's going to buy anything else. But so this is the first film in what they want to make a huge franchise. You know, they're already working on.
I thought Dracula. No, so
Dracula.
Story.
They've officially said that Dracula Untold is not part of this universe.
Oh,
so yeah, the Luke Evans film is not part of it. So the Mummy is the official kickoff of the Universal Monsters cinematic universe. And so, you know, we have the Invisible Man is currently in pre-production right now, and fuck, I can't remember who's playing.
Is there going to be a Frankenstein too?
There will eventually, but it's oh, who's the it's Mummy
Wolfman
and no. No. Mummy, Invisible Man, and
Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah. Oh, it's killing me. I don't remember
A Fish Guy, Blue Lagoon, or the Lagoon, Creature of the Black Lagoon.
No. Anyways, but do you think this is a good jumping off point? You know, people have fond memories of at least one of the Mummy movies, if not one in it. I'd say Mummy Returns is good until The Rock comes out at the end.
Yes.
Like, I totally. Dig the second Mummy. It's a little, you know, it got the kid and, you know, that's kind of cute, but people could be turned off from it. But I was down with that movie until The Rock comes out as like the half CGI Scorpion King. But until then, I dug the shit out of the movie. I love the first Mummy. I know I give you shit because it's a period piece, but it's great. And I'll debate the 99 thing in a minute. But what do you think, Justin? Is this a good starting off place?
The Mummy? I don't think so, because none of us know what the other monster movies are. Maybe we need a refresher on what the monster movies are. I thought it was a mummy, a wolfman, a Frankenstein, and a Dracula.
Yeah, those will all have their own movies, but those are not the first three.
I can't imagine what is more important than those for recreating Hollywood's monsters. Like, if I were to get... if I were to go to Universal Studios Hollywood and get on a tour bus, there was a time when those creatures would come and try and scare me and pose for a photo. That might not be a thing anymore, but it was all the ones that I just mentioned. So yeah. I don't know. It seems kind of weird. They are like...
So the Mummy is the first one. Right now, they are currently writing The Invisible Man, and then after that will be The Wolfman.
Okay.
The Wolfman will be in it. And then from that point on, if those are successful, they'll do a Van Helsing, then a Creature from the Black Lagoon, and then a Bride of Frankenstein movie, all before a Dracula and Frankenstein film. Does that sound weird? Javier Bardem is going to be the Wolfman, and Johnny Depp is going to be the Invisible Man.
So if Dracula and the Untold Story was a bigger hit, would that have been the launching point for this?
I'm sure it would have.
Okay.
Kind of like how Iron Man is the official start of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but when Iron Man was made, they had no plans for a cinematic universe. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, they've kind of revised it since then. Oh, yeah, Iron Man and Incredible Hulk, they're definitely part of this thing. And I think had Dracula Untold been a huge hit, I'm sure they would have done the same thing to it.
Right. Well, I have to agree with Randy on this one in that it's a shame that it's not a period piece. I think that it would have been a lot cooler to have all of these movies be period pieces. Especially when that's just an era when... Everyone, like, no one knew what to make of all these crazy monsters, so it seems like it could have been a lot more fun. Might have been more expensive to do it that way, but I don't know. It seems like it's more fun. And I just looked at a screenshot from the original Mummy, and I just got all kinds of excited. I remember the visual effects just being so badass for that. When he was, like, half-made and walking towards him, and it was really funny, and it had all kinds of cool action, and Rachel Weisz was in it, for crying out loud. I'm sad. I kind of want to watch it again.
Yeah, that was definitely a good film. But I don't know if it's the best film in 99, Randy. Here's a couple films that were made in 99. American Beauty, Fight Club, we talked about. The Matrix, you mentioned. Sixth Sense. Let's see. Green Mile. Toy Story 2. Being John Malkovich. American Pie. The Iron Giant. Star Wars Episode 1. Austin Powers. Spy Who Shagged Me. Bowfinger.
Ooh, Bowfinger.
Office Space. The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Well... If I amend my previous statement, it's only going to be
for this. Bowfinger.
Well, yeah, Bowfinger would be a number
Dogma,
two.
Dogma, South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut.
I'll go on the record of saying maybe it's not the best movie of 1999, but it is my favorite movie of 1999.
There you go.
So it's all completely subjective.
It's pretty high up there.
It's good. It's a good one.
That was also the very first movie I ever saw in the city of Fullerton.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
They don't have that on... Do they have that on the placard when you enter Fullerton?
I don't think so.
Justin saw the Mummy here?
But I remember thinking when I got there, I was like, man, I could live in this town. And then I ended up doing it for, like, 6 years.
Huh. Small world.
I know, right? So, Chrissy Crabtree. Remember her?
No, oh, I remember. Well, I remember the stories. I never met her.
Fine young woman. Hope she's doing well.
Down all the way.
Yeah.
Well, you started talking about Westworld, Justin. So,
I couldn't tell you what's happening. It's the most boring show on television. I think everyone is just duped, and there's nothing else on, so you're watching it. You think you're supposed to like it, and you sound uncool if you don't like it, because everyone else is like, oh, yeah, it's so good, it's so good. But it's boring as fuck, man. It's literally put me to sleep every single episode I've ever seen. I have yet to watch the finale. I can't wait to fall asleep again.
And I think that's a popular sense. Like, I see more people disliking it than liking it. But I really do like it. But I think that what you guys are feeling bored is that there just aren't any stakes. Like, there's no consequences. Like, it's hard to root. It's hard to get emotionally attached to one of the hosts because, you know, what's going to happen? Someone kills them. It's fine. They just come back. They're not real. And you know that the guests can't be hurt. And so you're like, well, nothing's going to happen to them. So it just becomes this weird thing to where, like, usually characters drive the story, but you don't really care about any of these characters because nothing can happen to nothing permanent can happen to any of these people.
Right.
And so it's hard to, I think what a lot of people are having trouble and they're saying it's boredom is they're just not invested because they don't care what happens to these people because there's really no stakes.
Come back. Yeah. Even yeah. if, you know, like Maeve, when she's out of the park and she's in the lab, all sorts of crazy shit happens. But even if she were to murder everyone, they could just reprogram her and then start over again. So it's like, whoop-de-doo. I mean, obviously they've tried to do things, and she does have an interesting story because she's sort of scarred. You know, she has this emotional scar that has stayed with her, which is definitely cool that is a thing, but it's intriguing, but it's not enough to keep me going. There's a bunch of characters, most of them are uninteresting, and I'm not feeling it. I am super excited that everyone else loves it, but it's just not doing anything for me. I'm glad that everyone has a show that's not fucking Game of Thrones. That is a breath of fresh air. This particular show is just not doing anything for me.
Right. And I think if what happens at the end of the finale, which does a lot to a lot of the main stories, I think if that was like episode 5, I think it would probably have been better. Like it sounds like it looks and feels like season 2 is going to be amazing, but it's kind of weird that they used this whole season as a setup for the events of season 2. I'm trying not to spoil anything for you, Justin, so you can watch it. But yeah, I mean, the finale is pretty good. You know, it kind of is a game changer as far as, you know, there are consequences become a thing. You know, there may be some finality and permanent stuff to some people. And it does make me excited for the future of Westworld, you know.
That's good. See, like, I mean, I guess all networks kind of have to think about this, but for HBO, because it's like a paid service, I feel like they kind of toe the line a little bit more than anyone else in that they have to reveal some, but not enough to where, you know, you feel like you've got your closure so you can just cancel the subscription. You know, they want to keep you hooked in. So it's like they drag you along.
Right.
And I felt that with Sopranos the most. And that used to drive me insane. It's like, motherfucking HBO, you're killing me. You know, I at that time, there wasn't too many original programming shows. It was what? It was like Sex and the City and Sopranos and maybe one other thing. But it's just frustrating that they can get away with not showing or revealing all their cards as early as another show.
Right. No, I hear you. Yeah, and you do get a lot of answers, so it was good. It wasn't one of those, like, nothing gets settled and stuff like that. You find out who the man in black is. You find out a lot of answers, and so at least they were nice enough to give the fans, you know, some semblance of, you know, closure on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the popular fan theories was correct. So that's always good, too. And, I mean, I enjoyed it. I think the finale is definitely the best episode. and
the last episode.
Yeah, and like I said, when you watch it, I'm curious if you agree that like what they set in motion in the finale, had it been episode 5, and then we had like 5 episodes of what's to come instead of, you know, basically saving the, you know, the uprising for season 2. Yeah. Randy loves Westworld. It's his favorite show. He watches it when he brushes his teeth.
But only when I brush my teeth, so only for about 60 seconds a day.
Yeah, he's a little behind. He's a little behind. He watches about 15 minutes a week. All right. Did you, Randy, you like the Rogue One, or you'll probably like the Rogue One. What makes you more excited? That George Lucas loves it, or that Christopher Nolan is going to screen 7 minutes of his World War II film Dunkirk before a select few screenings?
Oh, God.
And by select few, I mean like 15 across the country.
Well, it's an interesting way to shove some World War II down your throat.
Oh, you like your World War II?
I do. And I personally don't have a problem with
it. Before you answer, though, Randy, I need to let you know the movie is the allies are the good guys in this one. Well, I know that might skew you.
It does. I'm teasing. I am more excited to know that Lucas likes the movie. That's what excites me most about Rogue One. Yeah. That it has the official George Lucas stamp of approval, even though
a literal stamp.
Yeah, you know, because he carries that little stamp around with him everywhere he goes, according to those Making of Episode 2 and 3 documentaries.
Best. I'm like, oh man, one day I just want to have a stamp and I can just see a wall of like production art and just go like, no, not that one.
Like, yeah, somebody spent hours and hours and hours on these and you're maybe going to select one and just some arbitrary
can't even put an X.
Stamp. Yeah, can't even sign it. Can't even initial it. Can't be troubled to put a little GL on it. Gotta have a goddamn stamp. But anyway, I digress. So he hasn't officially been quoted or anything, but Gareth Edwards, the director of Rogue One, has had a phone call with George Lucas, who had just seen the full cut of the movie, and he said it's a conversation that he will take to his grave, and it was very positive. And he said that because he was speaking to a bunch of like critics, film critics, reporters, whatnot, saying, no offense to you, but honestly, his opinion is the only one that matters. And more or less comparing him to God.
Yeah, they screened 30 minutes of the film in San Francisco to select area critics.
Interesting.
Which to me is just a tease.
Yeah, what are you going to get out of 25%
of the movie?
Yeah,
right. And it's, I mean, it's so close to the premiere. It's silly that they did that, but you know, I mean, if I were invited, I wouldn't complain. But
I know, yeah, exactly. I would go. Yeah,
exactly. But it just seems silly that they just wouldn't show the whole film. Yeah, it's interesting. Now, Justin, do you think that, you know, Lucas was pretty vocal about not really caring for Force Awakens because as he called it, it was his remake of a film he'd already done. Do you think he likes Rogue One more because it's something that was one of his ideas that they were making, that he had a part in an actual like pre-production of the film, and that's why he's like, well, this one's good because it was my idea?
Maybe, but I mean, that might even be harder for him to judge because, you know, it's something that he would have wanted his hand in, maybe. I don't know, it's hard to answer for that guy, but... you know, you guys are filmmakers and you have your own ideas and your own vision. You know, let's just say that you wrote your screenplay and rather than you guys direct it, you just said, here you go. Here's an idea, make a movie. And then it ended up being something that was different than the way you had pictured it. It would be, you know, hard to be fair with your critiques.
In this scenario, did I get paid $4.5 billion for my idea?
Right.
You know, I'll put up with a lot.
I know. I'm just saying. It's kind of a weird... I don't know. It's hard for me. I can't answer for the man. George Lucas is such a whack job. I think that Gareth Edwards was in a good spot to make his own little movie based on a fun idea that has been around forever, and it sounds like he knocked it out of the park.
And it's probably easier for him to accept this one because... Episode 7 was bringing Star Wars back. It was the first non-George Lucas Star Wars movie. It was the movie that everyone was going to compare to other George Lucas movies. Where this movie isn't going to be compared to the George Lucas films.
And probably. Other J.J. Abrams movies. You know, this guy was coming off of Star Trek. You know, there's the Star Trek people and the Star Wars people. And now you got a Star Trek guy directing a Star Wars movie. And it was weird for a lot of people. And honestly, I was talking about Episode 7 today, and every time I think about it, I get more and more upset about it. I don't even know why I get so mad about it. It was such an easy movie. Like, there was no risk whatsoever, and it was just 100% fan service, and I think they missed the mark.
Right.
You want to service me, you give me Luke fucking Skywalker and Han Solo together.
Yeah. And that's another thing that Lucas probably disliked about Force Awakens. He wrote an Episode 7.
And they just basically
threw it in the trash and were like, we're going to go this direction. We're just going to we found this other script. It's called like A New Hope. I don't think anyone's filmed this yet. we're going to shoot that one.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It just seems absurd to me. So, I don't know. I think that I think that Rogue One is probably a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, I hope so. Force Awakens was what you said. It was the safe movie. It was the movie that Disney needed. They needed the first Star Wars movie from Disney to be a hit. They needed and by doing that, they took zero risks and they made a very safe film. You know, it's enjoyable, but yeah, I mean, there are some things that surprisingly do make me very angry. But you know, on the whole, obviously, it's Star Wars. I love it, but you know, the Luke Skywalker thing, everything about how they're portraying Luke Skywalker in Episode 7 worries me for how he's going to be portrayed in 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. Because whoever wrote Episode 7 doesn't have a clue who Luke Skywalker is and what his character is. I mean, he's not just going to, you know, just shut down and like just go hide like a hermit and stuff like that. And so that is the only thing that worries me about Episode 8. I think that everything else they have down, it's just, if they're going to keep portraying Luke in this way, I don't know if I'm going to be terribly pleased with the person who I named my child after.
I know, and it's so silly. Like just thinking about it right now. So when he fights Darth Vader for the first time, right, he is a little boy up against a giant, right? And it would be terrifying. And he loses, for crying out loud. But then what does he do in the next movie? He, like, actually goes to him. He, like, brings the fight to him and says, look, man, it's not about you and me, man. It's about you. You're better than this. How brave is this young man to go and do that? And now I gotta watch him just go hang out on some other planet and let the world just fall apart all around him? I don't think so.
He went to Endor and let himself be captured.
Right.
And he, like, walked into the belly. He let him take him to the Emperor with, like, no weapon.
Yeah.
He's like, we're just gonna talk this out, Dad.
Yeah. I mean, that's a brave dude.
And that was him with, like, almost no training. It's now you're telling me that after 20-some-odd years of training, another relative of him, this little whiny kid, he's not gonna do the same thing? He's not just gonna, like, follow this kid and be like, sorry, I gotta kill you now.
Yeah, he's just gonna shut down. Give me a break.
And the rules and the breaks.
Yeah. If he can find a way to get through to an evil Sith Lord, I'm pretty sure he can handle a little brat.
I believe so. Hey, Randy, do you think they're going to... Let's put your tinfoil hat on real quick. How do you think they're going to incorporate Rogue One into Episode 8? I have a crazy idea.
You have a crazy idea.
Yeah, I want to hear if you have any crazy ideas.
Well,
so I was thinking about that. Disney's not going to... There has to be a connection. Like,
well,
Disney's
okay.
Too smart.
So there's either going to be a rebel leader of some sort, maybe, that ties the two together. Who knows? We don't know the fate of Mon Mothma, so she can come back in Episode 8, theoretically. I mean, she'd be old as fuck, but it's a possibility. Let's see. We see all sorts of blue Mon Calamari. Maybe we see a blue Mon Cal officer come up alongside Admiral Ackbar. There's all sorts of alien creatures. I wouldn't mind seeing some of them in future Star Wars episodes. But my real answer, I think, is going to be Darth Vader.
Ooh, Do tell, Randy. Gosh.
So, obviously, Darth Vader is back in Rogue One in a big bad way. But I also think we're going to see a more vulnerable side of Vader. We're going to see somebody... We're going to see him maybe a little bit more weak than we ever did in the original trilogy, especially like in A New Hope era. Just because I still happen to think that that's got to be him inside that Bacta tank that we saw in that very first teaser. So, I don't know. I think
really?
We're going to see something. Yeah, I think we might see a little bit of Vader unmasked in this. And I think that's going to carry forward into Episode 8, where we maybe see a little bit more of maybe I don't know if we're going to go the route of a Vader Force Ghost or what, but I think
Vader
somehow.
Yeah. See, I would think that he was more of his big bad self, like he's not putting up with anybody's shit, and he is like in the crawl, ruling with the iron fist kind of thing.
I think we'll see that to a degree, but I also think we've got to see a transition from the pussified Episode 3 Vader to what, you know, between that and the man in Episode 4, we've got to see that transition.
What is the pussified Episode 3 Vader?
Oh, just where he's all scrawny and whiny and bitching about his dead wife and kids.
Like before, are we talking pre-put on the mask?
Yeah. Once he puts on the mask, he still loses his shit like a little bitch, you know? But,
he basically murders every robot in the facility by doing it.
Yeah, but they're droids.
Yeah.
But still, it is kind of badass. Don't get me wrong, I love Vader.
That to me is the, like, this light switch. He's like Hawk from fucking Over the Top.
Oh, yeah. Flip the switch.
Yeah, he like fucking flips the switch there.
Vader should put his hat on backwards.
I can't see. You should. I really like the idea of seeing like Vader. I would think it would be in a flashback or.
Oh man, not me. I want to see him just be a cold-hearted son of a bitch, man. Just murdering fools. I want him to be that force of nature that just comes through. And everyone is just terrified. When they see Vader walking, they want to just fucking run. That's what I want to see.
I'm with Justin, because I think Episode 4 Vader is really the only Vader we see that just couldn't give a fuck. Like, he's a murdering son of a bitch. Like, he doesn't have a kid, and he doesn't have this, like, sudden, like, sparkle of light side that he gets at the end of Empire, and he has throughout Jedi. In A New Hope, he's just, pick this guy up. Tell me the answer. You don't know. Fuck you. I'm going to strangle you and throw you across the hall. I think in Rogue One we're going to see that Vader, mm-hmm. like the Vader that doesn't really even have a glimmer of light in him right now. Like, he's just all dark because he's pissed and he's brooding and his wife's dead and he looks stupid in Episode 3 saying no, so he's got to like get his cred back.
So okay, I'm not gonna say that we see him like emotionally vulnerable.
Like,
I just
letters.
Think we're gonna. No, I just think we're going to see his charred, limbless husk floating in a tank of Bacta.
Maybe.
I think we'll see him out of the suit to some degree, even if it's Sans helmet.
Really?
It's just that is just my prediction.
Like, you think he gets... Now, so do you think... Does he get fucked up, and that's why, like, that's why he has to go in Bacta at the end? You think that's maybe the end of the film?
I think he lives in constant pain, and he just needs to take regular Bacta baths just to, like, maintain his shit, you know?
He has to eat he can take his back pill.
Yeah. Do you think that Bacta tank is on the Death Star? You think that's on, like, the planet? Like, maybe he's on, like the Jeddah planet because it's, like, a layway for Force users and stuff like that? Maybe... He's like regenerating.
I don't think he's necessarily stationed on the Death Star. I would think it would be aboard his Star Destroyer, or a Star Destroyer. I think it's a portable thing that could move around when necessary, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be on the Death Star.
You bought it on SkyMall, Dave. It's a portable back the tank.
Yeah, next to that toaster where you put the hot dog and the bun in. Yeah. It cooks it for you.
Why are you not getting this?
I guess I should get it. Well, I saw an interesting theory, and it was something that I was kind of thinking, and I was kind of expanding on this small theory. What do you think about the concept that the rogue folk, the rogue people, you know, we obviously don't hear about any of them, and it would be really hard for them to pigeonhole a way for them to stay both alive and in the rebellion and have no point in the original trilogy. And I can't imagine them doing something like that because it would be silly. What if they realize, I mean, they're all rebels, they're all bad dudes and stuff. What if at the end they turn to the dark side and they join, maybe not the Empire, but they join somebody and they become the Knights of Ren?
I've read this or I've seen it online just because, okay, so they take that one still image of the Knights of Ren in the rain as, you know, just like a random flash that you see during the Wraith Force flashback thing from episode 7. And they're comparing, okay, well, this guy's staff over here kind of looks like this guy's staff from Rogue One, and this guy's gauntlet kind of looks like this other guy's gauntlet from Rogue One. I don't buy that.
Have you seen the Force Awakens concept art for the Knights of Ren? That's the one that someone was sharing that kind of got my head spinning.
Now, that one I didn't see. I just saw stills from the two movies side by side.
Gotcha. Okay. So they have their names, and well, not their names, but like they're like, you know, they're generic, whatever they're called. And let me read you their names here. So they're called, one's called the Heavy, one's called the Armory, one's called the Sniper, one's called the Monk, and one's called the Rogue. And I mean, it's all speculative. And so this guy like juxtaposes who he thinks these people are. And so you have the Monk, and the Monk is very much, you know, Danny Yen's character with staff and stuff like that. Then you have the Sniper, and he's holding, like, the same kind of gun that, like, the skinny guy who says, we're Rogue One, has. And then you have the Rogue, who has, like, the same stance and mannerism that, like, every picture of Jin has been in. And I just think it might be kind of cool, you know, if maybe they take a turn on the dark side.
Here's what I realistically think it is, and you can mark my words on this.
Mark them.
I'll probably be wrong anyway, so it doesn't matter. But I think they just liked that that artwork so much that they're like, you know, inspired what? Let's just them. Kind of let's, because they would have come up with that well before they were or during pre-production for Rogue One. So I think they just may have recycled.
Recycled?
Yep.
It's Disney. They don't recycle anything. Just throw in the garbage and start over.
Recycle, reduce, reuse.
Yeah. the first trailer had ended with like something along the lines of, you know, decide like who will you fight for or how are you going to end up or some bullshit, and it showed Jin in like a black TIE fighter pilot outfit.
Yeah,
right?
It's a Imperial ground crew. Yeah.
So that kind of led you to believe that, you know, either she was using this outfit to infiltrate the Empire, or, you know, is it going to be so in your face that she just ends up, if you can't beat them, join them? I don't know.
And notice he says, when you are captured, not if you're captured.
Right. Like, this is going to happen.
Force Whitaker's a smart guy.
Yeah. And his character is in Star Wars Rebels?
Yeah, Saw Gerrera.
That's kind of cool.
Clone Wars.
Oh, Clone Wars.
Yeah.
I thought he was in Rebels.
No, he was in Clone Wars.
Either way, it's kind of neat that they're tying it together.
Yeah. It is cool. Yeah.
Especially now that he's going to be a bad guy. He's going to go the dark side. I mean, I think I'm just trying to assuage my fears that none of them can live and have important parts in the rebellion, because this mission is like one of the most important moments in the history of the galaxy.
Yeah, that's just it. I don't think that they can get away, Dave. It's like, it's one of those things where they are able to transmit those plans to Leia's ship, but they're not making it off this rock alive.
And I'm fine with that too. They all die. I'm happy with that too. Especially if Vader takes a couple of them.
Yeah, I don't think it is in the cards, because it's a giant surprise to everyone that this Death Star is not only functional, but is even a thing.
Yeah. And Vader says, we intercepted many transmissions. Many transmissions were beamed to you, so there's not like a personal handoff, so they don't need to leave the planet. And Vader is definitely in a bit of a mood trying to get these plans back.
Maybe so. They just keep losing their Wi-Fi signal.
What's the password again? Gotta turn it on off.
Yeah. Vader 1.
Yeah. Vader rocks. ROXX.
Yeah. So I don't think they're gonna make it off that rock, man. It's gonna be like Deep Impact, where they'll all have a school named after them.
I like it. Did you guys see the clip that they released of Jin and what's his name? Sorry, the Diego Luna's character, the Han Solo guy? Mm-mm. Cassian
Andor.
There you go. Them mowing through stormtroopers on the street, and then Jin turns around at the end and like blasts a hole through the droid and it drops dead, and then the real droid comes up and says, "Did you know that wasn't me?" So we're gonna have jokes in this one.
It's good. They need those.
Yeah, they need them. But yeah, I think that's all we got time for. We've been going for a while.
Wait, here. No, isn't there something about 90s Disney movies?
Well, I didn't know if you wanted me to keep going.
Yeah, keep going. I've been waiting to talk about this since I saw it on the list.
Oh, all right. Well, cool. Well, you guys, okay. You guys want to hear a fun list?
I do.
All right. Our good buddies over at Collider.com have ranked the 90s animated movies from worst to best.
They're just animated?
Sorry, Disney animated films. Okay. There were 10 Disney animated films made in the 90s. They have ranked them from number 10 being the worst to number 1 being Beauty and the Beast.
Wow, there's some good ones, man.
There are a lot of good ones. There's a couple.
I don't even know if there's a wrong order to like the top like 3.
Yeah, I think there's like a bottom 3 and a top 3, and then the middle of those 4 could be anyway, but I think there's definitely a pecking order. But yeah, once you get, I mean, the bottom 3, everyone.
Yeah, like I would never fault anyone for saying Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, or Lion King is the best Disney movie from the 90s.
Yeah.
Personally,
or of all time.
Yeah. I mean, I would say Aladdin, but it's up, you know, it's dealer's choice.
All right. Are you guys ready?
Yes, do it.
I get to feel what Randy feels like. So, Randy, feel free to interrupt all you want to get your vengeance on.
Yeah, this is your heyday at Disney, by the way.
This is Randy's love of Disney at its height. All right, number 10. Tarzan. Everyone's favorite Tarzan.
Nope. With Rosie O'Donnell as an ape?
Yeah.
Pass.
I don't have any negative memories associated with Tarzan from my time at Disney, so I'm okay.
Tarzan was kind of an interesting movie in that it was like kind of the first one where they shifted out of like the musical genre to where they just had music in the background. Like,
yeah, it was like Phil Collins
music. Yeah. He won the Oscar. He beat Matt Stone and Trey Parker's Blame Canada for the Oscar, and I was so sad. Robin Williams performed it at the Oscars. May he rest in peace and show up on this list later. Number 9, The Rescuers Down Under. Came out in 1990.
I don't think that belongs on this list. Unless they only had 10 movies.
Yeah, I think there were 10 films.
Okay, yeah. Sure.
Fun fact about The Rescuers Down Under. The Rescuers Down Under is actually the last sequel that Disney Animation has had in the theater. They've had sequels like straight to video, but the last time they had an animated sequel to a film was 1990's The Rescuers Down Under.
Wow. John 26 Candy.
26 years ago.
Yep. They're going to break that next year when Wreck-It Ralph 2 comes, but I thought that was an interesting fact that was, they just assumed that they had plenty of sequels because that's what Pixar seems to be doing. But
well, does that mean like 2D animation? Because wouldn't Wreck-It Ralph be more 3D?
Well, they're only doing 3D now. They're not doing any 2D animation anymore. Princess and the Frog and Winnie the Pooh killed it.
I was like, wait, but what about like fucking Toy Story and Cars or whatever? But then I guess Cars was straight to video. Toy Story was Pixar, not Disney. So
straight to video. Cars is Pixar though.
But didn't Disney officially buy Pixar by the time Cars 2 came out?
Disney owns Pixar. Disney bought Pixar. Cars was still under Pixar, but Disney has produced sequels through Pixar. Mm. But Disney Animation is you know what I was talking about.
That's the caveat.
There's a caveat.
Disney Animation, not Pixar.
Animation. Number 8, Pocahontas. Randy's personal favorite.
Dude, that movie can suck 12 dicks. like big Justin Cavender sized dicks.
Oh, now we're talking.
Oh my god. Okay, so the reason why I hate that movie so much.
I love you, Randy. Not...
I hear stories, man. I hear stories.
You hate Native
and
American.
You send us pictures every goddamn week. But anyway, unsolicited, I might add. But
they're solicited. They're solicited.
So
you opening so... it is endorsed. It's consent.
Oh. I see. Me punching my own code into my phone is consent. Is it now? All right.
Yes.
All right. I'll remember that in a court of law. So anyway, my issue with Pocahontas, what year did it come out? Is it say that on your
99.
List there? 95. Okay, I started working at Disneyland in 1995. And there was this one little store in Frontierland where great brand new technology in the 90s, they could play video up on the wall and pump music all throughout the store. They did that at Disney stores and malls and that kind of thing. But, you know, in the early to mid 90s, it wasn't everywhere, kind of like it is now. So, but they only had the technology to really do like a little 5-minute loop. So all that we had going on in that one store all goddamn day was Colors of the Wind from Pocahontas. Beautiful. Every day, like a 3-minute song on a goddamn constant loop.
Like Small and World.
Everybody working in their Small World, at least if you heard it in like all the different languages, it would take longer than 3 minutes to go through the whole loop. Granted, it would still drive you crazy, but this was just over the top outrageous. And even the guests shopping in there would go nuts after a few minutes going like, how can you stand to be in here? Does that play all day long? All goddamn day. And what happens when the store closes and you're counting out your till, you're restocking the shelves, you can't turn it off. There was no physical way for the regular cast members to turn it off. So you were stuck with it even when the goddamn guests were gone. And that is my problem with Pocahontas.
Wow.
The movie itself might be fantastic, but goddamn if it doesn't give me some PTSD like reflexes when I think about that thing.
Yeah. But Justin loves it.
No.
No. That's too bad. The fun story about Pocahontas is that it came out in 95, and you remember in 93, Beauty and the Beast became the first animated film of all time to be nominated for Best Picture, back when that meant something because they only nominated 5 pictures. And Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was in charge of Disney Animation at the time, had 2 films in production for animation, and he decided that Pocahontas was going to be the first animated film to win Best Picture. So he took everyone that he deemed talented and special off of this other film and put them all onto Pocahontas. And, of course, Pocahontas didn't win any awards. And the other film that he took all the talented people off just happened to be The Lion King.
Wow.
He was like, he didn't understand The Lion King. He thought that it was a cute movie, that maybe they'd release it on video. And then, of course, it became, you know, The Lion King. Number 7 is one of you guys' favorites. I've never seen it, but you guys talk about it all the time. The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Woohoo!
Number 7.
I have very good memories associated with that. Including a little action here and there. So let me tell you, summer of '96 when that movie came out, it was good times.
Now they weren't playing this on a loop in your stores in the French Quarter.
Actually, no, I was actually out. There was a little area called Big Thunder Ranch back behind Big Thunder Mountain at Disneyland, and there was a little stage that they had erected back there where they did a Hunchback of Notre Dame show. And there was a little merchandise location called Esmeralda's Cottage. We had a cart and we had like an actual like little log cabin kind of thing set up. And it was all just a bunch of friends of mine that had all hired in around the same time as me. We ran the place night and day. It was a good time. And the music, it actually wasn't that bad. I actually owned the soundtrack for Hunchback because I enjoyed it that much.
Oh,
I didn't get sick of it. And oh, I could tell you stories.
That was my favorite little show that they did. Their little live action show of
yeah. There was a lot of acrobatics and swinging around
with the Gippos.
Yeah,
the Gypsies.
Yeah. And it was nice because that was always like a dead portion of the park. Like no one's ever totally on that side of Big Thunder Mountain.
Well, because previously there's like Big Thunder Barbecue, there's a restaurant, and then there's like a petting zoo that's only open seasonally. Other than that, the only reason anybody ever walked by is if they wanted to take a shortcut to get from Fantasyland to the west side of the park.
Yeah. I remember one of my friends, she worked at the petting zoo because they had the cow with the Mickey Mouse ears.
Mm-hmm.
Like its spots look like a Mickey Mouse
ears. Oh, yeah, Mickey Moo.
There you go. All right, number 6, my favorite, Hercules.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Doesn't suck. I don't have any good memories about that one, though.
Oh, yeah? That's too bad. Visually, it's definitely a different look for Disney, but I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of fun shapes. Like, everyone's got, like, a triangle and square bodies. Like, I don't know, it's weird. A lot of polygons in Hercules. But it also had, this is fun, too, because there were animated series that came after some of these movies. There was, of course, the Hercules show, which was awesome, the animated series, and then even Aladdin had an animated series. That's a fun little era of cartoons where you're just able to expand on something that you love so much.
And everyone sounded almost the same.
Yeah, there are a couple of normal voices, or, you know, continuing voices, but some of those big A-listers, you can't exactly wrangle those guys in.
Yeah, I remember the guy who played Danny DeVito's character was not good. I remember he was the only one who, like, didn't really sound like the guy that got to play Hades sounded like James Woods, but Danny DeVito's character, not so much. Number five, Mulan.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah. When will my reflection? I'm so funny. Number four, The Little Mermaid. Here we go. We're getting into the heyday. Top four. Now, Little Mermaid technically came out December 1989, but this author decided they were going to include it, and I'm glad they did, because it's really the beginning of the second golden era of Disney. You know, and it's surprising how much I like this movie, that since it is at its core a musical, a Disney musical, and that's kind of one of the things I didn't like about Moana recently, was that it was too much of a musical. But Little Mermaid, guys, good movie.
Yeah. Assault in Palm Desert.
Ooh.
I know.
Where there are no mermaids.
No. There are not.
All right. Number three. This is a hurting one. Mm. Number three, Aladdin.
What? Are you nuts? I mean, that's fine. I mean, I started this whole thing saying it could be Lion King, Aladdin, or Beauty and the Beast. There's no real wrong answer. That just kind of makes me a little sad. And maybe they just don't get it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, like, I would have to say that Aladdin is hands down probably the funniest Disney movie ever made. Like, I'll still laugh at the genie and some of the stuff. But, yeah, so they gotta make the hard calls, I guess.
Randy, do you love Aladdin? Right?
I love Aladdin. I think it's great. I'm trying to think. I know what one of I guess I know what both top two are going to be. I just don't know the order. Aladdin's pretty high up there for me, though, so I'm glad it's number three on the list.
Yeah. Number two and one are the highest grossing animated film versus the most decorated animated film. So it's going to be a toss-up. Number two, any guesses?
Beauty and the Beast.
Yep, Beauty and the Beast. I got to say Lion King's one.
Number two, The Lion King.
No!
Is The Lion King. It wasn't as good, because remember, he took all the talented people off the film.
That's a real piece of shit.
I had a similar reaction to this that Randy had to Pocahontas. So Lion King came out in 94, so hit the video market like in 95. I worked at Blockbuster for a couple years, and we had those same kind of tapes, and they played Can You Feel the Love Tonight and Hakuna Matata. I heard both of those songs every 15 minutes for, you know, an 8-hour shift. So I feel Randy's pain, and that's why I never would say anything bad about his hatred for Pocahontas. But for the longest time, that led to my hatred for The Lion King. And it wasn't until I had kids and I got to watch it kind of through their eyes for the first time, and, you know, having 15 years since I worked at Blockbuster, that I saw what an incredible film it was. And I was glad I liked it.
Well, there you go. I feel like I also heard the Awimowe song.
I'm sure.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle song. That was played on the radio all the time, too. Not that it necessarily had anything to do with The Lion King, but it was part of the marketing.
Yeah. African sounds. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, means
we know what that is.
Number one is Beauty and the Beast, which is a pretty good film. It's pretty good.
We saw it as a class field trip. We went to...
Oh, really?
Yeah, we went to the Chinese Theater. And Man's Chinese Theater, and it was an experience.
Really? That's a fun little field trip.
Yeah, we saw it, like, it hadn't come out officially yet. It was, we got to see it, like, a week before the movie came out.
Yeah.
Neat. Yeah.
What about you, Randy? Did you see this on a field trip, too?
I did not see it on a field trip. In fact, I don't remember the circumstances under which I did see it, but I remember I saw it several times.
Several? With several. A different lady each time.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it was that time. It was that time of my life.
Lisa 1, 2, and 3.
No, 3 wasn't until later.
Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
But it could have been 1 or 2, yeah. I had a weird thing when I was younger where I dated a lot of girls named Lisa, and they ended up all getting numeric monikers. So I apologize in advance if any of you ever end up listening to this podcast. Please know that I'm not disparaging you in any way, and all your secrets will stay in my book until I die. Then it'll be published.
That's right. He has a death switch on it, to where upon his death, it automatically self-distributes. It becomes sentient.
Oh, man. Are you going to have...
It's Amazon the moment I keel over.
Are you going to have, like, a top secret drawer with, like, really fun things, like a giant fist and lubes?
Okay,
and
so I'll tell you this.
Just so when you die, you. Just to make all of us just be like, oh, that Randy.
Okay, so the book that I mentioned is a real thing. I didn't make that up. There is an actual book. It's kind of my exploits from... all throughout the 90s and early 2000s, with pictures, diagrams, and all sorts of incriminating evidence. No joke. I mean, this thing is terrible. And in the exact same drawer, and I'm sitting 5 feet away from it right now, in the exact same drawer is this giant purple double-sided dildo. And the only reason I have that is because we used it in a movie. But I happen to keep it hidden away in the same drawer.
I can say that they both exist. I've seen both. I've not been allowed to read the book. Randy has read me some passages, but yes, they exist. I always assumed that one day Randy would come to me and say, "Hey, when I die, I need you to come to this one place and burn everything." I have that rule. I have the thing with Chung. He's like, you know, there's a drawer that I need you to clear out before my parents come to find my body. So everyone should have a friend like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take these top three, Aladdin, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, all are getting remade. They're all getting the live-action treatment. You know, Beauty and the Beast will come out next year. Bill Condon's going to direct it. It's going to be a musical version. You know, the Lion King, John Favreau signed on. He's going to direct it. Guy Ritchie is in talks to direct Aladdin. Which of these three films do you think has the best chance to be successful in a live-action medium as well as the animated film, Justin?
Well, I think Beauty and the Beast is a lot of people excited, man. And this list might be an indicator that it's everyone's favorite. So I think Beauty and the Beast is probably going to knock it out of the park.
Yeah, because now you're pulling... I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's really it.
Oh, I was going to say, all the Disney movies so far, you know, Jungle Book, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Pete's Dragon, those are all the old classics that, you know, even... most people alive today think of as like that movie they saw when it got released from the vault. This is kind of their first foray into that millennial nostalgia, that 90s nostalgia that everyone who saw these as kids now has kids or is of the age to where they would take other children to it. Randy, you think that puts additional pressure or does that make it easier because they have the built-in audience that like a Pete's Dragon didn't have?
Right.
I think the built-in audience is going to go a long way. God, I mean, if you were to ask any girl who grew up in the 90s and 2000s who their favorite Disney character was, it would almost always be Belle. So there's a good 20-year period of time where young girls and women going through their formative years just idolize that character, and they're all... of good solid movie going age and maybe even starting to crap out kids of their own that they're going to take to go see movies. And I don't know. I think the built-in audience is going to have a huge, it's going to be a huge draw. So I think Beauty and the Beast is going to do it. It's going to be the first live action Disney movie to really be a contender.
Okay. Well, I'll ask you both this question. What do you think is the bigger pitfall for Aladdin? Not casting an all Arab cast or navigating the tricky minefield that is replacing Robin Williams as the genie? Go with you, Randy.
Okay, so honestly, I think they are going to catch an insane amount of flack if they whitewash this. Mm-hmm. So they can't. They're going to have to go with an appropriate a region appropriate cast. And I guess that's kind of a really euphemistic way of saying they're going to need to cast brown people, folks. It's going to be.
Which Disney is not good at.
I know, it's going to be what it comes down to. But, wow. But, I mean, they're both a thing, but I think they're going to catch way more public flack if they cast it irresponsibly in today's political climate, as opposed to, because there's nothing that can be done about the Robin Williams thing. Absolutely nothing. So we're going to have to adjust to there being a different style of genie. But I think somebody else can do maybe, you know, not the same job, but they can equally do a good job. So it'll be fine.
To make it different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be different. And the live version should be a little different.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that you could equate to a high-profile role like the Joker. That's just a tough act to follow, and it's you know, everyone thought Jack Nicholson was amazing as the Joker, right? And then Heath Ledger knocks it out of the park, and it's like, oh my God, who could be better than Heath Ledger? So I think that that's kind of a fair comparison. Is that's just such a high-profile role that it's just tough. But I mean, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say, consider this, too. I mean, if they're truly doing it as, like, a live-action reboot, they may not have wanted him anyway. Mm-hmm. Look at Beauty and the Beast, because... Now, forgive me if I'm wrong. I could be completely wrong, and this is an insensitive thing if it is. Is Angela Lansbury still alive?
Yes.
No.
No.
I thought something...
I was going to say she might have just died then. If she is still alive.
She's alive. She's alive.
Is she? Oh. Yeah. Good. I'm glad.
Yeah, well, I was right.
Why didn't she reprise her role and do the voice of the fucking teapot?
Well, she was born in 1925.
91 right now.
Yeah, so I mean, assuming she still has control of all of her facilities.
But she's not as iconic as...
Not as iconic, is, well... Well,
I mean, not even. I wouldn't say even close.
She did do it in the Kingdom Hearts games. She voiced Mrs. Potts. That's worth mentioning.
Yeah, but I mean... Mrs. Potts versus the genies.
No. In terms of voice actors voicing characters in that particular movie, can you name anybody else who's more high profile than she was at that time?
Yeah, dude from Law and Order, Orbaugh. Yeah,
you don't even know his name. Therefore, it is null. Neither of you can mention his name.
Yeah, Orbaugh, Jerry Orbaugh.
Doesn't matter.
He was a living legend. He was Baby's father in Dirty Dancing, Randy.
He was the one who put her in the corner, when statistically no one puts her in the corner. But he did.
A living legend.
Well, he's not living anymore.
I'm just saying
he was.
They had the option to bring her in if they wanted to maintain that iconic voice with that character, and they opted to go a different direction to take somebody else. So who's to say that if Robin Williams was still alive, that they would want him voicing... the genie. They might want to just take it a different direction so people don't closely associate the live action and the animated version. Maybe it would have been intentional that they go a different direction. So maybe that's not even a blip on their radar.
Maybe she was a diva, Randy.
We didn't need him anyway.
Maybe she was a bitch. Maybe she was just me.
No one's going to be like, that fucker didn't do it like Lansbury did. Lansbury slayed Mrs. Potts. No one's going to do that.
She put the chip in that little son of a bitch.
Yeah, how do you think he got that chip? How do you think Chip got his chip?
Oh, jeez.
Emma Thompson is the new Mrs. Potts, by the way.
And it was that was a long time ago, man. Beauty and the Beast was when? 93? Yeah, fuck.
Aladdin's 92, so.
I was going to say, Aladdin's even longer ago.
Wasn't Aladdin after Beauty and the Beast?
No, it went to Little Mermaid, Oh, yeah, no, it's right. I'm sorry, yeah. Aladdin was after Beating the Beast time.
But Beating the Beast was 92, and Aladdin was 93.
Yeah. The Lion King was 94.
Yeah. Man, that's a lot of home runs in a row.
Jeez. Just can't wait to be king. Yeah, I think they need to do something drastically different with the genie, just because they can't compete. I mean, Robin Williams' genie is pretty amazing, but I agree that they can't whitewash this film, and they don't really need to. Usually when they whitewash films, it's to get like a big star like Scarlett Johansson because no one's going to see Ghost in the Shell without her because no one cares about the property. Aladdin's a property that everyone knows and loves, and so the property sells itself. And so you can have an entire Middle Eastern
house. Do you know who you're talking to right now?
What?
Everyone that listens to this podcast has seen Ghost in the Shell.
Are you going to see the Ghost in the Shell movie, Justin?
Yeah, probably.
That's not a commitment. Randy, are you going to see the Ghost in the Shell movie?
No.
I'm not
gonna. No, but I mean, our audience.
Now, I know. I was making an example. Okay.
Yeah, all of America.
For it to be a successful film, more than the geek community needs to see the film. We saw that with Warcraft, for Christ's
sake. Right, absolutely. 100%.
For it to be a four-quadrant film, you know, they need some star power. To where Aladdin doesn't need that because everyone knows Aladdin.
That
or
is true.
You could have all unknown, all Middle Eastern, or you could, heaven forbid, find, you know, you put Dev Patel in it. You know, people know him. Mm-hmm. He was in Slumdog Millionaire in Newsroom. Chappie, for Christ's sake. He was in Chappie. That means something.
Yeah.
I don't know what.
Oh, my God.
You should look at Brian for Disney. So, sorry I went so long.
No, it's fine. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Good try. You guys got anything else? Anything else you want to add? Any bears you want to poke?
You've depressed me.
How did I depress you?
With your whitewashing talk. You're like Tom Sawyer over there, whitewashing.
Tom Sawyer got other people to whitewash. Or was it Huck Finn who got them? Yeah,
no, it was Sawyer.
Sure is fun painting this fence.
Huck Finn didn't do chores.
He was Elijah Wood, for Christ's sake.
Some call me Sarah, some call me Mary. Oh, I love that movie.
You can have live-action Disney films. From the era that you hate, Justin.
I know! I don't like live-action. The first, honest-to-goodness, live-action Disney movie that really hit a home for me and was a slam dunk was probably Pirates of the Caribbean. The first one.
Before it became a parody.
Curse of the Black Pearl, or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah.
Blew me away. I mean, when I was a little boy, I liked Swiss Family Robinson, and Old Yeller. But, I mean, those movies were already fucking 40, 50 years old. So it's like, what to do?
Yeah, if we don't get a trailer for Pirates 5 before Rogue One, that's a serious sign that there's something wrong with the film. Like, they've passed, there's been so many Disney tentpole films that they could have attached a trailer for Pirates 5 on. All we got is that tiny teaser, and this movie's 6 months from being out.
Oh, yeah, with Javier Bardem.
Yes.
Yeah, I finally just saw Doctor Strange last weekend, and that was the first time I saw the Pirates teaser up on the big screen.
Did you like Doctor Strange? Same one we've been seeing.
I actually enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I didn't think I'd be into it at all because of that superhero fatigue I've been feeling lately. But it felt different enough, and it was fun enough that I kind of enjoyed it.
I like when he's in a little time loop at the end and just keeps getting killed over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty badass.
I like when they cast their spells, and they do like the little twirlies with their hands.
Yeah, there were a lot of things I really liked about it. I'm not 100% sold on Benedict Cumberbatch's performance, or maybe it's his American accent. Something about his performance just felt a little bit off to me.
Because you saw it in Iron Man 1.
What?
Was he in Iron Man 1?
No, he's playing Tony Stark from Iron Man 1.
Oh.
This guy who has everything, and then like loses it all, and like grows a goatee, and then like becomes like a savior.
Right.
Like it's arrogant asshole.
Well, When you frame it like that, I'm like, holy shit, you're right. But
I
didn't even think of it, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's like, oh, we don't have Tony Stark for many more movies. Let's pimp out the warlock dude here.
Yeah.
It's Sanctum Sanctorum.
But I actually, yeah, I'm converted. I didn't think I'd like it, but I do.
It's like you went to one of those camps.
Yeah. Pray the gay away.
Well, on that note... Any shout-outs, or do I want to know?
Hey, guess what we're doing this weekend?
Got a camp? I don't know. I'm afraid to ask now.
Oh, we got a movie that's playing in Florida twice.
Are we hosting a camp?
No. Geek Legacy does not condone camping of any kind. Camps are dumb.
Are we being sent away to a camp? What's going on here?
No Holy camps. Shit.
Camping is fun.
No, it's not. Camping is dumb.
Voluntary camps are fun. Mm-mm. The other kind, not so much.
They're all terrible. Roughing it is dumb.
Yeah.
So, if anybody is going to be going to Paradise City Comic Con down in beautiful Fort Lauderdale, Florida this weekend, Nonstop Comic Con is going to be playing twice. Friday, December 9th at 4:30 p.m. and also again Saturday, December 10th at 3:45 p.m.
Check it out. Might be the last time it ever screens in the universe.
Oh, shit.
Ever.
That's going to the Ice Capades.
Right.
Oh shit! It's getting nonstop on ice.
On ice. Planes on it. Planes on ice.
There's gonna be a dude in a plane costume, just kind of flying around
with his arms out.
Yeah, totally, absolutely. No characters. They're, it's gonna be the most boring ice capades ever because they're just talking the entire time.
No way. You got the porn stars with the hard nips on the ice.
This is true. Yeah.
You got we got the fighter jets in there. They come up behind. Cool.
They have these Nerf guns. They fire missiles and stuff.
This thing writes itself, Randy. I think we should convert this to an ice space show.
And let's make it a musical. It's going to be like an ice musical.
Oh, well, of course. I mean, musical is there any other kind?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
We're not an asshole.
Well, half of us aren't assholes.
Well, which half?
That's funny you said half. I was just about to say 50%. I love how that's like the number. I feel good about that.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. In this scenario, I don't feel like I'm making out as good as
you are the worst, Mr. Edmondson. The worst.
I've been told that. Clear my mom's dying words.
That's rad.
Mr. Edmondson, you suck. But, yeah. Well, thanks for joining us for another amazing episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Make sure you listen to all the other podcasts in the Geek Legacy Network, including the Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Steve talking about video games. That was my robot voice, because video games are like robots. And you have the Comic Corner Podcast with Jeff and Tyler talking about funny picture books like He-Man and Archie and probably an X-Man or two. And, make sure you like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Geek Legacy, and go to geeklegacy.com for everything you ever need to know about geeky shit. Thanks.